I'm Brittany French.
Hey, I'm Rob McDonald.
And this is the Great Plains Outdoors Podcast.
We're going to talk about everything from fishing and hunting to hiking, paddling, and adventures on the Great Plains. We'll cover it all here.
So join us each episode and hear what's going on in the great outdoors on the Great Plains. Hey, y'all, welcome back to another episode of the Great Plains Outdoors Podcast. As everything starts to come back to life after a long, dormant winter, it's fun to be planning spring and summer adventures. I know I'm very eager to fill my schedule up with some turkey hunting, maybe some springtime fishing, and definitely some wild foraging. All of those activities have one great thing in common. I think we all relate to that: ingredients for some delicious food. And I'm really excited to learn more about today's guest and what he has to do with that. But first, Rob, let's hear from you. What have you been up to?
Hey, Brittany, you know, it's great to see you too. Turkey hunting has been most of what I have been up to lately. I was able to get my oldest boy out on a real exciting hunt that was actually put together by Outdoor Mentor. Shout out to that, you guys. You do a fantastic job, and
thank you.
We really appreciate everything you do there. That hunt came together perfectly for Mason, and he was able to fill his tag in about 15 minutes after legal shoot light. I mean, we had birds gobbling all around us, and these birds came. Probably the biggest hurdle on that hunt was waiting for those four toms to separate enough to where he could shoot one and be safe and not, you know, hit one of those other birds. So
it's an incredible.
You look over in the blind, and he's just shaking. Like, you can hear the rattle of his little Mossberg pump gun. He's shaking so hard, you know. So
that's awesome.
I've been trying to get my youngest son out too. We have gotten out several times. A couple times we had birds coming, thought it was going to happen, and all of a sudden you hear that dreaded putt. It's like, oh, they don't like it, you know. So things haven't worked out for him yet, but we've got plenty of season left here in Kansas, so I'm optimistic about that. And I actually got out myself this morning, had an idea on where some birds were roosted at, and got in pretty close. Lots and lots of gobbling. They were gobbling at each other, gobbling at the toms on the next ridge over, gobbling at the crows and the hoot owls. And when they hit the ground, it was that spit drum, you know. Man, it just get your blood up. And was able to fill my tag, which for me is a blessing that, you know, I don't have to kill a turkey, but now it's just focus on my little man. So I have heard that some white bass are being caught up in some shallow water. And that usually means that the crappie are not far behind. And that kind of gets me thinking about, like, here I am with two wild turkeys in the refrigerator. You know, we save the breasts, the legs, the heart, the liver, do the gizzard thing. So I got all these, you know, pieces and parts, and no doubt we're going to have some fish cleaned here in the next little bit. And, you know, that gets my family and I fixed up for some grub. But I think maybe having those ingredients, maybe that's where that today's guest comes in to help us out with that.
Yeah. Well, first of all, congrats on your turkey harvest on opening day.
Thanks.
You sent that picture in the group text. I'm like, well, dang, Rob is just showing off now.
Now what are you going to do with your mornings?
Exactly. Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, I'm super excited to introduce our guest today. I met Jason last year while working on a few events with Whitetail Properties. Jason Ellsworth has a company called Ellsworth Cooks, where he travels across the U.S. and is the ultimate camp chef. And I can vouch for that because I've ate many of the dishes, and they are ultimate dishes, let me tell you. So let's get to know Jason a little bit. He graduated early from high school, and he joined the Army and spent 4 years on active duty, and then another 8 years after that on active guard, where he taught basic soldier skills to other reserve units across the state of New York. While attending State University, he started working in bars and restaurants for extra income. I think we can all relate. We've been there before. He fell in love with hospitality, beer, and its production. Soon after that, he started to sell beer and did that for 12 years. He managed thousands of bars, restaurants, and a team of 20 sales reps and breweries from all over the world. COVID hit, and watching his friends' bar and restaurants collapse was incredibly difficult. I think we all also can relate to that. It was a hard time. He couldn't fix it. definitely broke his spirits a little bit. I know I've heard his testimony quite a bit, and I just appreciate his resiliency through this. So through a lot of that hardship, Jason made it a big decision to quit his amazing job, get sober, and start his own business called Ellsworth Cooks in 2022. So through Ellsworth Cooks, Jason gets to use his hospitality skills and mix it with his passion for the outdoors and outdoor cooking. Just last year, he was in 22 different states. He loves feeding folks and especially loves changing their minds about the animals they kill. Jason, before we get started, first of all, thank you for your service.
Yeah, yeah. I was glad to do it. 17 years old and a $10,000 check was, I would have done pretty much anything.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. And yeah. I'm just so excited you agreed to be on the podcast with us.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. I was brainstorming with Rob one day and I thought, man, we need to have Jason on here because a lot of our listeners are doing exactly what Rob said, filling their freezer. And what else are we going to do with that besides cook? So let's get to know you a little bit. What's the day in the life of Jason? Who are you? Where are you from? Give us a little tidbit.
Yeah. So, that introduction is pretty awesome to hear everything. It's weird. Cause I don't like looking back cause that's not the direction I'm going in. I like going forward. And it's kind of crazy that like, when you asked me to write that up a while ago, I was like, this is weird. I'm 45 now. And I think how much my life has changed in the past year, let alone the past 25 years. And, pretty blessed. I've always been, I knew very young and very early that if you wanted to be invited back to camps, you better pull your weight. And the grill called me at a very young age. My grandfather and uncles would go to the bars before I came along. And then I got to come along and they're like, what do we do now? And there was a old Weber in the corner. I was like, I can cook on that. And that was the beginning. I was 13 years old, hot dogs and hamburgers on a old Weber grill in the corner. And it's come a long way since then, but my whole life, the one thing that's been consistent is the outdoors, hunting and fishing, and, rolling that into the hospitality aspect of like taking care of folks. And, you know, there's a old adage that to serve is to love, and I will say I cook a lot better for folks I like.
That's but, awesome.
Yeah,
yep. Jason, I'm curious, like when Brittany started telling me your story and even through this introduction, right? Like I get it. You were in hospitality. Sounds like you were into some brewery stuff,
yep.
Bars, restaurants, right? And also into hunting, fishing, the outdoors.
Yep.
How did it click for you? To like, did it sort of happen, or was it a goal to be like, well, I know that there's guides and outfitters out there. There's people going on hunts, trips, camps, whatever. They probably need somebody to show up and cook, so I could do that. Like that would have never entered in my mind. So how did that happen?
Yeah, that's not how it happened for me at all. I when I quit my very big job for a very long time. When I laid in bed one night and I rolled over to my wife and I was like, this job's killing me. I need to quit. And she was like, you know, ultimate support, you know, from this is why, you know, it's just my wife is amazing. She's like, if that's what you have to do, that's what we have to do. And then you put everything in the categories of like worst case scenario. What's the worst thing that's going to happen if I can't, you know, have this six-figure income now? So we'll lose our house. Okay. I'm prepared to not have that house anymore. What's beyond that? Like, what's the biggest fear? And I think facing those fears is like really looking, you know, at yourself and like, what are you prepared to do to change? And I was willing to give up everything. So I quit my job without a real plan. And a very good friend of mine named Casey Bard, who owns a company called Tacticalories, which is like a high-end seasoning company. And our worlds overlapped between the breweries because I would handle a lot of the breweries that he was selling the seasonings to, like asked me to be his sales manager for his company. And I was like, this is match made in heaven. Let's go. And he was trying simultaneously to launch his outdoor seasoning company, like seasonings meant for wild game. So I quit my job December. December 6th, I started with him January 1st. And at that point, it was just awesome. Like Casey is a business mentor. he's been around the e-commerce world for a long time. Like, he is just one of the best dudes to come across. And he hired me on as sales manager. We didn't really understand how that was going to work. And I was there for 3 months. It was the shortest job I ever had. Gas prices, if you guys would recall back, flew through the roof, and I handed him my monthly gas receipt. And he's like, I didn't see this coming. And I was like, yeah, how could we? And he goes, I don't know if we can keep this going this way. And I was like, I have like no ill will towards you at all. I appreciate it. And like, he's like, well, this company down in Texas asked if we wanted to do a cook, and like, it's kind of all set. Do you want to go do that? It's like, I was like, heck yeah. And it was my first time in Texas, and I went down and cooked for a bunch of hog hunters there. And I didn't know, and this is such a good lesson learned in life, that you never know who's watching. You never know who you're talking to. And I was there for 3 days, and I knew there was camera guys there, and I was, you know, scared to the bejesus belt, like getting in their way and just kind of staying out of their way the whole time. And the one guy looks super serious, and like, he's carrying around, like, you know, I just wanted to stay out of his way. And 3 days go by, and he's like, hey, what's your story? And I was like, and he asked me kind of like that. And like, I kind of told him my story, and he goes, what do you want to do? What are you doing? What's your plan here? I was like, it's like, I just want to do cool stuff. My friends get paid for it. And he goes, that's like my life motto. And from that minute on, that's his name's Caleb Copeland. He owns a company called Copeland Creative, and he's the production manager for, he produces Lee and Tiff's show, The Crush, and he produces a ton of stuff for Black Rifle. Just the perfect time to meet him. And that day was our last day in camp. And he's like, I'm hosting a camp down the road a bit. You want to come cook for us for a few days? I was like, and that's the, there's also like a power of saying yes. And like, you know, that was scary. I didn't know those guys from anybody, but I knew that I had enough confidence myself. And I knew that like, I could cook pretty good. And I was like, yeah, I'm totally in. And I went and cooked for those guys in Texas, and Ellsworth Cooks was kind of born right then and there. And I haven't looked back. That was, it's crazy to think that was like a little over a year ago. Yeah. And it just, he actually gifted me, which was such a cool thing, gifted me as the camp cook for turkey camp last year to Tiff, to like take off the, you know, Tiffany is, Lukowski is one of the hardest people, working people I've ever met. She is a million miles an hour, and if you're not, like, if you're not helping, you better get out of her way, or you better like, so I love her. She's the closest thing to a sister I've ever had, and we hit it off. I'm actually sitting in her mom's house right now, and she told me in this kitchen last year at this time, she's like, this is it's like having my mom back, which is almost like puts me in tears to think about, it's like having my mom back. And that was the greatest compliment I ever could have had. And that went from, you know, that camp, the Copeland crew gifted me to her to take the stress off, which is such an awesome thing to think about. Yeah. And then fast forward to hunting season, I hit the road in September and didn't come home till Christmas, and hit the road right after Christmas again and didn't come home until, well, I think I got home beginning March.
Yeah.
So, that is now a now I'm back on the road again. It's a grind, but I think it's like, I love it. So it's, you know, the hardest part is leaving the camps, like, cause you're falling in love with those people you're working with, and leaving the camps is heartbreaking every time. It's like, don't get me wrong, there's some camps I'm glad to see in my rearview mirror, but the hardest part is like, you know, leaving our friend Pete behind, leaving, you know, Lee and Tiff behind. But then you realize, like, all right, he'll, if I do back. A good job, yeah, you'll be back. Well, God willing, you come back healthier and more grateful over and over again. And that's kind of when I find myself in these amazing places and I'm breathing in that air, those amazing places. And my goal over and over again is like, how do I get back here healthier and more grateful?
I love the story, Jason, because this is like a true testimony of when you say no to something, you say a loud yes to something else. So you said no to that corporate job, this lifestyle that was just killing you, wasn't making you happy, healthy, you know, passionate about anything, right? And it turned into this loud yes of, yeah, I'm going to be a camp chef and I'm going to be really freaking good at it. And so yep. I love that. I love that that happened for you. And it didn't happen by happens chance either. I mean, I think you have an incredible gift. And I think when you put your best foot forward, which you did, I mean, lots can happen. So I'm curious, describe some of these camps for us. You know, what does that look like? I say camp chef, the ultimate camp chef, right? But like, are you in tents? Are you in
Yeah, sometimes.
So break that down. What does like a month of being a camp chef look like for you during
so it all depends on, and I kind of know what I'm getting into based on the conversation I'm having with the camp owner or the guide outfitter about what their scenario is. But my tagline is any camp, any kitchen, anywhere. And that was really put to the test last week. So, you know, I don't know how deep you want me to go into it, but like I got to Utah last year and was one of my first camps I took care of. And we were mule deer hunting, mule deer, elk, and then moose, which was just awesome. Like just awesome to be a part of those camps. And the first camp I flew into Salt Lake City and the camp was like 3.5 hours away from Salt Lake City. They left a trailblazer for me, like a truck, like a GMC trailblazer for me at the airport and said, just drive into camp and you'll be all set. So the tank was on full when I left. I drove into camp. I think it must've been the hunters weren't getting there till Sunday. So I flew in Thursday night. Flew in Friday, got into camp Friday night, like ghosted on fumes to get there, knowing that there was gas in a gravity fed gas tank and there should be some supplies there. I got there, none of that stuff was there. There was no gas in that tank, there was no food in camp, and I'm out of gas 70 miles off a paved road. So the old soldier in me was like, adapt and overcome, what are you going to do? And I found a fishing pole and fished for rainbow trout and ate trout for 2 days until someone got to camp. That was an extreme side of things, right? That was that. And then then you go to places like Pete's Place and it's like, you know, a 5-star lodge kitchen, you know? So that's, I think, like, I love, one of my very good friends is a chef, which I was very cautious about calling myself a chef for quite some time, and he's actually an amazing chef, and he donned me with that moniker of chef, which I'm very proud to wear, because he explained to me that a chef is, you know, a chief of the kitchen. Like, they're doing all the organization, you know, hosting, budgeting, all those things. He goes, guess what, pal, you're a chef, you can call yourself a chef, which is pretty awesome. But he goes to me, he's like, it's like you get to lift Chopped every week. Like, you never know what you're walking into, you never know what's going to be in that basket, you never know what you're serving. He goes, he runs a few restaurants, he goes, the monotony of running restaurants is just that, it's monotonous, and not a lot of, like, you know, every once a year they are once a quarter or whatever it is they get to change the menu and do something else fun. But he's like, every week you get to roll into a camp and you don't know what wild game you're serving, you don't know what you're cooking on, you don't know. And that is kind of a fun thing that keeps me very well on my toes. It's not very fun at the time a lot of times, but it always, I think there's a couple things you can't take away from a person, and like, you know, your work ethic is, like, I'm gonna work through it, I'm gonna figure it out, I'm gonna make it happen. And you might not see it in the kitchen that I'm like frantically watching a moose fall and like, this is not coming out the way I wanted it to, but when it comes to the table, it's calm and delivered. But yeah, I think, like, you know, if you stick by like the old adage, like, work hard, do what's right, you're gonna win.
So yeah. Jason, you touched on a few things there that I'm curious about, and I guess first off, for some of our guests, listeners that maybe you know, a lot of folks, especially in the Midwest, like, the idea of hunt camp, maybe is kind of foreign. You know, it's like, hey, it's Saturday, and so we drive to the local walk-in hunting ground or the, you know, reservoir public ground, or you know, maybe they got private access, hunt for a few hours, then go home. So, you know, you're in this scenario where folks are at a destination type we're going someplace for a certain amount of time to do a certain activity. And while we're there, we need to be fed. Right. So I'm curious, you know, you mentioned you're at turkey camp now.
Yep.
You mentioned deer and elk, like, you know, is it upland, waterfowl? Do you fish in camps or people like, hey, we're having a family reunion and we need.
Yeah. I kind of steer away from the family reunions. I'm probably to a detriment to myself because I get invited to like do a lot of like weddings and bachelor parties and stuff like that. I just don't want that atmosphere changes what I feel like I want to do. So I'm pretty specific on having it outdoor, you know, industry, outdoor themed, you know, where it's like, I really want to be, you know, around like-minded folks. I don't want to, you know, have a drunk uncle coming over here and telling me his political opinions and me being stuck by the grill and having to listen to him. Like that's my nightmare. The kitchen actually at home was always an escape for me because I knew like it was, I intentionally held back on getting a pellet grill forever because a stick burner demanded my attention. And if you wanted to come talk to me, you had to come talk to me. And that saved me from having to go wander through the party, you know, which was a nightmare for me. But yeah, I think it's the camp. I think my mind immediately goes to the camp is almost where you're at, and you know, it can be anywhere. I've done some hiking stuff where, you know, we're bringing salted fish with us in the woods and sitting down around a campfire and eating, you know, stuff we caught in Florida a couple months beforehand. Yeah, everybody knows food tastes better outside. So I think like if you're hungry and you're burning out and to sit down in the woods someplace and, you know, have a little fire and eat some delicious food, everything tastes better out there. So,
yeah. So, yeah. Just play out a scenario like outfitter calls you and says, hey, we've got the, I don't know, Iowa, Nebraska, South Dakota, whatever, whitetail rifle opener kicks off. And I've got 7 hunters that are going to come stay with me. You know, I want to book you. So then yep. Is that typically, hey, you're doing breakfast, lunch, dinner? Or is it just, I'm just doing a big supper in the evenings? You know, what does that kind of look like?
No, I think it all kind of, we determine that with the outfitter. I feel like hunter breakfasts aren't ever really a thing because everybody's kind of flying out the door. So, you know, I'll always put out, you know, it all depends on every camp, but I feel like dinners are always the big star of the show. You know, I've had camps where they're asked me to pack bag lunches for them and I'm fine with that. You know, I think,
now, when you say dinner, you're talking about the evening meal, right? I'm from the Midwest, yeah. So dinner's lunch.
I was about to interject there, yeah.
I'm learning the ways outside of my humble upbringings in the Finger Lakes, New York. Yeah, so supper.
The evening meal.
The evening meal is always the star of the show. And what typically I'll do is to figure out, all right, we're going to have 7 guys in camp. Any dietary restrictions, because that's becoming more and more of a thing. All right, no dietary restrictions. I'll arrive, so the hunters are going to arrive, say, Saturday. I'll arrive 2 days beforehand, kind of at least 24 hours beforehand, kind of get a lay of the land, like, is there a store here? What's in the freezer? What am I cooking on? Like, so it's not a surprise to me that, like, you know, the hunters are there, I'm there at the same time, like, oh, crap, how are we going to do this? It's definitely, like, a laid out strategic thing to say, all right, I know the math on these guys, and like, one guy's not going to be a big eater, one guy's going to be a big eater. So you're always, you know, you figure, you know, your ounces per serving per guy, you know, how many meals do we want to cook? Do you have game meat in your freezer you want me to use? Awesome, which is always a yes. I don't know too many camps I'm rolling into that don't want to feed their hunters wild game. And I think it's also, an education for the hunters about different ways to, you know, use their wild game. Cause I feel like, what we fall into in a lot of these camps is that I call them traditional mistakes of like, their traditions, really, of like, this is what we do with the turkey, this is what we do with the crappie, this is what we do with, and it's all great and those traditions are awesome, but it doesn't really get you out of that microcosm to say like, there's 100 different ways to do that stuff. And what's really cool is that I get to see how those traditions are done, which is usually, you know, through me cooking with somebody and the outfitter is like, oh, this is how we do those, and I've always done this way, which is usually a conversation, and then me changing the way that they use their wild game or fish, which is always super fun for me because, you know, at home, now I've been in New York my whole life, and until recently, like last year, it was known to me that lake trout were a garbage fish and you didn't eat them. And I just, if you would ask me that, I don't know where that came from, that fact came from, that was Bible to me, like that they're not going to be good. And and getting outside my own shell, like trying stuff out, and you know, this is an oily fish, and like looking at like how those fish are handled in different parts of the world, like how do you do that? Well, a lot of people smoke those things, and like if it's got a strong fishy taste, like maybe we can use some like habanero honey. So I started monkeying around with it, and did smoked candied lake trout and handed it to fishing veterans to say like, this is that, and no it's not. And then like, and then you get to the source of like, where did you hear it was bad, like, or did you cook it? And it goes back to like, this is a real heart and core fact in my business that unless I've cooked it and tried it myself, I don't believe that it's bad. But you think about like my grandfather and his buddies, those guys weren't cooking at home, right? So they weren't the guys like firing up the stove at home to cook a steak. So you know, this is a generation ago that if I judged every piece of venison by that first piece I had, I wouldn't eat it because it was terrible. It was a well done cooked piece of leather with mustard on it. The only reason I ate it because I wanted to make my grandfather proud of like, look what I'm eating. But that was trash.
Yeah.
And now that was a known fact. Then, you know, 50 years ago, you had to cook the heck out of game meat or you'd get sick, you know? And how many things are like that now that are like, this is, you don't eat that. Like how many things you like, I'm sure like something floats through your head that's like, you can't eat that, it's crap. Where have you tried cooking it? Or have you had like somebody else like that's, you know, has some culinary experience to try cooking it? And I think it's just a tough thing to like get people by that, like, you know, if you love it and harvest it, you should probably try to figure out how to eat it.
Yeah. What's that old joke I've heard told about, whether it's venison or waterfowl, you know, like, well, how do you fix your ducks? How do you fix your deer? Well, I put it in a Ziploc, I put it in the freezer, and then next season when it opens and I buy my tag, I throw all that away so I can replace it with new game meat in the freezer, right? And I think that personally, I think that local vore movement, you know, where folks are getting into hunting and fishing that don't give a crap about the score of antlers or how old a buck is, or, you know, if they're shooting a mallard or a pintail or a widget, whatever, they just are excited to bring home some wholesome protein that they sourced and it's not in a piece of styrofoam wrapped up in plastic, right?
Yeah. I think people want to know where their food comes from. It's becoming more and more of an importance that, you know, this is a whole rabbit hole we can go down, but, you know, until the 50s, heart disease wasn't a really thing in this country. You know, when we started changing the way we consume genetically modified corn, all the, you know, these things that people cooked with animal fat 50 years ago. And somehow, you know, this is my own opinion, somehow that we shifted away from animal fats because they're bad for you and they're going to give you cholesterol, which like cholesterol is not necessarily a bad thing, that you need to consume this stuff, which is a cheap corn sugar based, you know, product that, that is highly addictive. Like sugar, like corn syrup is just it's one of the most addictive things on the planet. And then you realize like all the stuff that, like all the health problems that go into that stuff. And all of a sudden, you know, you're sick and you got to buy a cure from the same people who are selling you that stuff. When you look at like who owns all those things, it's like, it's kind of scary. And I think that's why people are really starting to care about like where their food comes from. And I know this is my own body, my own experience that like when I don't consume gluten and sugar, I feel 1,000 times better. I can tell you that I went off the rails on sugar and some delicious Girl Scout cookies a couple days ago. And the next day I felt like crap.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because
nothing drinking, against Girl
Scouts. No, hey, great organization.
We I'm love saying, your cookies.
Yeah, we all do. But we're saying is those things are delicious. And, you know, but I can tell you that, and it's probably moderation. This is where.
What maybe is that?
Maybe not the whole box of tagalongs.
I think that's one serving size, though, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they are the devil. And I cannot just eat one of them. And I can tell you the next day I felt like crap and my joints hurt. And it's like, what's causing that? And it's like, oh, it's gluten and sugar. And, yeah, it's inflammation based on my consumption of those things that I'm 4 days without it. And I thought I could jump through a window. Today I'm flying around energy. Just like, it's just a crazy difference that, even when you look at like how other folks consume, like across the world, right? I have very good friends with a lot of different people from all over the world. Brady, you met them, the South African guys at like at Pete's place. They don't eat our bread because it's so sweet. Why are we putting a ton of sugar in white bread?
Right.
You know, because it tastes good and that makes you buy that product over and over again.
Yep.
So, you know, not to go too much further down that rabbit hole, but I think like, folks are really, really starting to care about where their animals come from, how it's harvested. I would encourage the people that are hunting and getting into the hunting and fishing world to like take a butchering class, you know, to figure out how to like break down that animal on their own, because I feel like a lot of the times that they're so careful with their meat and so concerned about like every step of it, and then they send it off to a processor. And then, you know, 2 months later, they pick up what may or may not be their deer. Yeah. And I'm not saying they're all like that, but I'm saying if you're very concerned about like every step of it, that you should probably learn. And like, it's such a daunting task, like breaking down a whitetail deer, like with the first time you look at it, like, how do I do this? But you've done the two hardest parts already. You know, you've harvested it and you've eviscerated it. And now if you know, hang it correctly and do everything you're supposed to do with it correctly, just get to know the next step. And it's not crazy hard by any means. And I feel like a little bit of confidence in that stuff goes so far.
Mm-hmm. One thing I really appreciate about your perspective on this, Jason, and I feel like this is kind of just like a shadow maybe that lingers over like the folks who hunt and fish at these camps. Like it's, you know, lots of drinking and cursing, like it kind of has this like negative spin on it. And I think that this episode is really fun for me because we're shining a different light on that. Like, that's not what it is. And I appreciate what you've done. And I love chatting with you when we're out at Pete's place. It's like, you just like challenge the heck out of all of those stigmas. I mean, you're like, hey, I don't need a beer to like have a good time. I don't need to eat a bunch of sugar to feel good. And I'm going to like get excited about showing you how to prepare your wild game. I mean, you prepared for us a meatloaf of all things, and it was the best. It was venison, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, it was elk. Yeah.
Elk. Oh, the best elk I have ever had in my entire life was in a meatloaf form. And I loathe meatloaf just from my upbringing, to be quite honest. Don't tell my mom. Don't tell my mom. But I mean, I just wanted to plug that because I just really appreciate the challenge you present everybody in the room you're with, because I just think it's really unique and you just you leave respecting it and asking yourself, like, what do I want to do? Like, what am I willing to change to be a better hunter, better cook, a better person?
Yeah. So well, if that's all a side effect from, you know, I think I look a certain way, I talk a certain way, and I think you know, people judge you based on your appearance a lot. And it's unfortunate that folks do that, but when I open my mouth, it doesn't necessarily go along with everything they thought I was going to be. And which I enjoy being an outlier. I like being a weirdo. And I think it's hopefully giving other folks the confidence to have their own voice. You know, that you don't need to go along with, you know, the perception of, you know, people outside the hunting industry that I have a very close relative that loathes what I do. And it makes it, she's very boisterous about it. And I found that it's not, the screaming back and forth doesn't work, but the intelligent conversation about why I do it is helping her understand it. You know, and I also think like that's one of the biggest things as hunters, that if we play into the stereotype of like, you know, drunk, kill everything in the path, like that's just so much fuel for the guy, the folks that are trying to take it away from us. When we have the ability to have an intelligent, candid conversation about what we do and why we do it, instead of, you know, screaming, it's my right and I can do this, which doesn't fix the problem. It just divides the gap, which is a huge problem. But I think that's one of the coolest things about food, is that if you consume meat, that we have a common ground. You know, we can actually start talking from there. And, you know, why do you consume meat? Well, this where do you know where your meat comes from? No, not really. Here's why I do this. And even in the hunting camps, I feel like it's such a cool thing to be able to change folks' minds in hunting camps. That first camp I was in Utah, the 10 guys there kept on referring to their venison as I don't know if we can swear on this or not, but you know, crap meat was basically what they're saying. It's like all crap meat. It just was just itching me the wrong way the whole time. And I was watching them butcher a deer, and I was like, golly, no wonder like it doesn't taste good. And I grabbed a deer out of the wall tent and like brought it over and started showing those guys how to break it down, and treating the animal with reverence is such a critical part of what we do, is that, you know, is like showing that we do have empathy for the animals we harvest, that we're not just, you know, throwing them back in the truck, tongue hanging out, blood everywhere, like what the antis think we're doing. But even showing like hunters, like, here's why we have reverence for that animal. And here's the greatest way. And if you can teach them reverence for it, you can teach them how to honor it. And here's how to honor it. We're going to consume this in the right way. We're not going to just, you know, I'm all for making jerky and ground and like doing it all, but like when I went without anybody knowing, there's 10 guys here. I went and fired up the Weber gas grill, old gasser at camp, fired it up. And I took a backstrap off the table and seasoned it with salt, pepper, olive oil, and a little bit of instant coffee. And like went and put that thing on a hot grill and cooked it to like 120 degrees internal. And I brought it back over to the butcher table and I sliced it up. And they're like, what's this? And I just started handing it out, and guys are like eating it. And I'm like, what is this? I'm like, that's your mule deer. And those guys were like, we've been in camp for 17 years. 17 years those guys have been going to that camp, and every one of those deer they've killed, those 10 guys, has been ground up in a jerky and given away.
Yeah. So I'm curious. I've lived that story, right? And you know, I work hard personally. I think we have the same vein of passion, right? To try to take this food and treat it with respect and present it in a way that people can try to get past that stigma. And so I'm curious, you'd mentioned, you know, you've got friends all around the world. Are there some dishes, maybe some like, hey, here is one of my top go-tos for somebody? Like, for example, I like to make Vietnamese pho soup with mallards, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
People eat that and they're like, this is a duck, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or my kids love it. We go on a squirrel hunt. We'll cook down squirrels, pick it, and make egg rolls.
Yep.
And you know, somebody, if you tell them after they've eaten four of them and tell you how delicious they are, they say, well, yeah, that's a squirrel. You know, they look at you all sideways. So what are, I guess, some of your go-tos that, you know, you're in camp. Yeah, obviously, like you mentioned, like the treating the meat with respect, breaking that animal down clean, keeping it cold, and then hitting it, you know, a venison loin like that, you hit it on the grill, you do it right, don't overcook it, it's going to be delicious. But are there some like kind of go-tos that you're like, man, if somebody's afraid of eating this, this is how I present it?
Well, I think what you, the two dishes you just described, those have a place of commonality between folks. Like people know what egg rolls taste like. People know what pho tastes like, you know, where I'm from, people know all about fancy stuff like what you're talking about. But I think it's like a commonality thing to say, like, there's not a time that you can put like summer sausage, venison summer sausage, elk summer sausage on a charcuterie plate that people aren't picking at that and saying, holy cow, because it has a commonality to it. Like they understand from the Hillshire farm days that like that's something they've consumed before. So I think like getting a new wild game eater into that stratosphere is like presenting them with something that they've consumed before, and then having them have that reminiscence of that stuff. One of the favorite things I love doing camps is to take front shoulders, which are usually just such a, you know, a labor to pick all the meat off them. I'll smoke whole front shoulders off of whitetail for 3 hours at like 225 just to get them firmed up, and then I'll take a braising pot pan, you know, anything like a big turkey roaster pan, put those front shoulders into that roasting pan over a bone broth or, you know, peppers, onions, anything like that, and then put them in the oven at 300 degrees until they pull. But if you do that right, you can pick up that front scapula and everything falls clean off that shoulder, and then you're making what essentially pulled beef sandwiches, pulled venison sandwiches, that it just blows people's mind. So like, this is venison. And our common mistake in venison is that you got to remove all the fat. Well, you got to remove the exterior fat that won't ever render. The interior fat will render. It just has to be done in a certain way. So that recipe, we it's a barbacoa essentially what we're doing. And that recipe's really damaged our sausage outtake, because we eat that so often. It's such an easy thing to do, 6 hours. So it's, you know, I've done it in a crock pot with a small, those Texas deer, we did it in a crock pot. I was like, I can't believe a front shoulder fits in a crock pot, but it was awesome. But that idea of like, once you unroll that aluminum foil off the top of that, and that steam wafts out and hits people in the face, and then you grab that scapula and just pull it off, and all the meat falls into that sauce, and you stir it up and throw it on a really good bun. I don't know too many people that can't. I don't know too many meat eaters that you'd eat that and like they don't fall in love with it.
Oh yeah, man! Like what, sandwiches, tacos,
burritos. Sandwiches, tacos. It's awesome for a few days. So like, I'll do a bunch of it, and then it'll go from the sandwiches, you know, for dinner, or I'll do fajitas with it for dinner.
Uh-huh.
The next day I'll mix in the eggs, that we'll have lunch with it once or twice. Mm-hmm. Like it's awesome. And it's such an easy thing to do. And I think like I was saying before, it harkens back to something that they recognize, and it's not like you're not putting like a buffalo tongue on the plate and like, eat this, you know, that's something they've had before. Where, you know, and I really truly believe, and this is one of my goals, is to, if you enjoy that, how do I get you in the woods to go after yourself?
Mm-hmm.
And that's I feel like you know, I'm always pulling them in further. I'm like, you like that, maybe we should try this. You like that, maybe we should do that.
Kind of struggled with that, like people talk about, you know, flying liver, you know, a duck or dove season or whatever. And it's like, you know, I don't know very many domesticated protein products where you just like, you know, okay, a ribeye, you know, you're going to just take it, season a little bit and grill it, right? But if you just took some beef and cooked the crap out of it and that was no seasoning. You just put it on a plate, like ground beef, a piece of pork shoulder, whatever. It's not going to be good. So the idea that, hey, you should be able to do that with game meat and it will be good. It's like, where does that come from? I don't understand it.
I think people were concerned about getting sick for a long time. Like, you got to cook the heck out of that. And in some cases you do. Bear, you know, you have to cook past 160. Like, you just have to. Like, you'll get sick otherwise. I think, like, that's where folks just for a long time were like, yeah, who knows where that animal's been? You don't want to get sick. Sure. But, I mean, my old man always said, you know, Indians seem to like it. But I think it is, I hear it all the time. Like, that fish is really bony. I'm like, you ever eat a chicken? Like, yeah.
Turns out they are too.
That thing's got a whole skeleton inside. You'll pick your way around that.
Man, but. Well, I'm very confident in saying I'm starving now.
Yeah. I fast until noon every day.
Yeah. I also think, Jason, here, before we kick off our lightning round, I think that what we'll have to do with you is get some recipes from you and share them on our website. I think folks would love to hear from you and some of your favorite recipes. So
yeah, I'd love to do that. Yeah,
I'll collaborate with you on that. But I think we can start our lightning round if you're ready for it.
I don't know if my hands just start sweating. What is going on? All right, I'm ready.
It's a big deal. It's been featured on ESPN, you know, the da-na-na, da-na-na. So.
Perfect. Awesome.
All right. So these are just like a series of questions. Since I know you fairly well, this, that, maybe tell a quick story type of thing. So we'll kick it off here. And you talked briefly about this. So do you like the idea of butchering your own game and showing others how to do that, or preparing that game on the skillet and showing somebody?
Yeah. Yep. 100%. I think it's how you get, like I was saying before, it's how you get them a little bit further down. Think about what an ounce of confidence has done for you in your lifetime along the way.
Good point. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. All right. So are you going to move that game into a traditional cast iron skillet, or do you just like a traditional skillet, throw it on the stovetop? What's your preference there?
At home, I'm using my 1800s Griswold daily. What's cool now is like you can go to like any Walmart and buy a lodge and season it, and you know, but at home I'm definitely leaning towards using my, you know, there's something cool about reaching into the past and thinking about who held on that thing. So yeah.
I like that too. There's like a nostalgia to it, right?
Yeah.
I like that. Yep. All right, this one's for Rob. You just harvested a turkey on opening day. What's your go-to recipe?
Well, it's for you, Jason, but you're giving me a recipe, right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So are you answering this question, Rob?
No, you are.
My go-to recipe? I love dill brining them. Taking dill pickle juice and brining the breast overnight.
Okay.
And it's it's the dumbest thing in the world. It's not. It's actually one of my greatest strokes of genius. I followed the Chick-fil-A frying recipe.
Chick-fil-A and, style, right?
Yep, I did it last year in camp, and I don't know, I think, like, I came to this camp, I hate the fact that, like, everybody just wants to do jalapeno poppers, and I hate the fact, like, people, they taste good, and they're great, but, like,
sure, they're easy.
I don't want to do poppers over and over again, because it's not really, I know they're good, but how do you experiment a little bit? And last year at this camp, I did that dill brined overnight, and then fried it, and, like, the fried recipe from Chick-fil-A. And there was an older gentleman at the fire. He goes, I've been eating turkey my whole life, and I'm really mad at Yankee made it the best way ever.
I love it.
That's not how he said it, but you can color it up a little bit if you want to.
I love it. Well, Rob, there you go. Get the turkey or the pickle brine out.
Pickle juice. Yep.
It's so good.
I love that. So you're out, let's say deer hunting, mule deer or whitetail, you pick. Are you taking your bow or a rifle?
Bow every time. Yeah, I'm bow hunter. I'm bow hunter through and through.
Through and through.
I mean, when the season's appropriate, I will adjust to that season, but nothing fires me up more than grabbing my bow and going out.
On that same hunt with your bow, what's your ideal game? What do you like to chase? Deer, elk, turkey, bear? I mean...
I just grew up whitetail hunting. I feel like that's my, you know, there's nothing, sooner or later that heritage just becomes part of you. And the voices of our, I want to cry every time I think about it. It's like, it's the fastest way to bring back the voices of your family.
This
is how you do it.
That's a good word. I love that. I love that. What gets you more excited, mentoring someone in the field out hunting or while you're cooking?
I feel like cooking, because I know that there's better mentors for hunting. You know, I feel like, and I'm not saying the best cook, but I feel like that's, I'm a better cook than I am a hunter.
Well, I think you were onto something earlier when you said, if you can put an experience in front of somebody, that's not too much, right? It's just eating. Yeah. And all of a sudden they like it. You challenge them like, okay, do you want to go chase after this game?
Yeah.
I really like that perspective. It's really neat. So what is, or where I should say, where's your favorite place to be a camp chef and why?
Man, I feel like it's just where the people I love are, you know, that's cooking for the people I love is you know, that's at home. Mm-hmm. October, you know, which didn't happen too much last year, but at home with my friends and family around me. And it was actually pretty funny last year because a bunch of my friends were like, what do we do now? Well, hold on a second. Like, we're a year on the road. How's this going to work? And it was all about
who's
like,
going to feed us?
Yeah, it was basically that. And what about this? And we've been doing this forever. And like, how are we going to make sausage? And like, what's going to happen here? But I think like those times are becoming more precious to me. So like when you're working for your 3 week or 4 week, you know, vacations per year, and like, that's just a part of the tradition. Like, you're going to do that. It didn't mean as much to me as it did this year getting home, and it was more muzzleloader season at home this year, because it was like so the best thing my state's done in a long time, they created this holiday hunt, so between Christmas and New Year's, so everybody's off, everybody's home, and it's just like those days that are kind of like lost. Like, yeah, you know, you're like, what day is today between Christmas and New Year's? Well, now they open up a hunting season there. That's it's just so much fun. Like getting out with all my friends and you know, we're not sitting in stands then. We're actively tracking deer and in the snow and find yourself cold in the woods with your buddies and start a fire, and who's got what in their backpacks, and like, that's tough to beat.
Yeah. I love that. Good job, New York. Good job.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank goodness they did that. About time they did something. Yeah.
All right, Jason, you're doing good. Last question. So you just shot a beautiful whitetail deer.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing with that backstrap?
Well,
your favorite backstrap recipe.
I'm going to have to change the question a little bit, because the backstraps usually just...
That's never happened before.
The backstraps are going to go into... the backstraps are probably going to get frozen. But the tenderloins, they don't make it past breakfast. So the morning, it's my old man's tradition. It's everybody's tradition. It's like in the morning, whenever we harvest a deer, that we're having a hunter's breakfast sometime after we get... It's the tenderloin, the heart, never get frozen. So we'll cook heart and... we'll do breakfast heart fajitas, and we'll do tenderloins with runny eggs in the morning. Like those are the things that never. So I'm a tenderloin geek. Those are the ones that just don't make it past. And I think you can actually ruin tenderloins by putting them in the freezer. They're not meant to be frozen, but backstraps hold up a little bit better, because that dexterity of the meat, you can get away with it for a while. And backstraps usually don't make it past summer. But the tenderloins don't make it past breakfast the next day.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Sorry for changing your question.
No, I like that. But now I'm going to challenge you and Rob, both of you guys, with another question. You said runny eggs.
Yeah.
So that's what you call what? Sunny side up, right?
Sunny side up. Yep.
Rob, what do you call them?
Yeah, sunny side up. You know, if I order eggs at a cafe, it'd be like, you know, over medium usually. Home, I'll do sunny side, but in a commercial kitchen, I'm a little spooked about that. So.
Yeah, it's the spooky part. I don't think it's so spooky. It's the time from grill to plate. Right. Those yolks are
or plate to table.
Yeah, those eggs might not be so warm, and but I'll tell you what, if you've done right, like runny eggs and one of my favorite sandwiches to take backstrap that I smoke. So I'll do like whole smoked backstraps, and I'll the next morning after I cold smoke them, I'll throw them in a cast iron real fast and do like a runny egg on a breakfast sandwich. That is tough to beat, man. That is a good sandwich. Yeah.
My husband gives me a hard time because I call those eggs dip eggs.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I've heard him call
that. He's like, what the heck is a dip egg? I'm like, you dip everything into it. It's great. And toast, he's like,
bacon, hash browns, and all those in there.
Yep. He's anti-dip eggs, unfortunately. More for me.
Nobody's perfect. Nobody's perfect.
Sorry, Ben.
So, Jason, we want to be sure and plug your business again and make sure that folks know how to connect with you. You know, if we've got somebody that's an outfitter, or maybe they're going on a hunt this season and they'll be with an outfitter and they're like, man, this food's terrible, or the outfitter's looking for somebody, or folks just want to follow what you're doing. Like, how do they connect with you? How do they follow you? What's going on there?
Yeah, I think the easiest thing is just Ellsworth Cooks on Instagram. That seems to be the way it's all going. But yeah, any messages, and it's always if I see they're following the show or anything like that, I'll definitely like be a little more apt to answer them and stuff, or just following you guys. That just seems to be the way to go. Instagram seems to be it. My website gets okay traffic, but I think I kind of want the person to be a little more technologically advanced to be able to hire me, you know, like
more connected. I love it.
Yeah. So that's the easiest way. Ellsworth Cooks.
Perfect. Yeah. We'll be sure to share that. Jason, thank you so much for sharing your story, your recipes, all that good stuff. I hope we can share some of those recipes further with our listeners and our readers on our website, but thanks just for joining us. We appreciate you.
Tempura fried crappy on the menu tonight.
Kind of dipping sauce. Good. What's up with that?
I do a variety of dipping sauces, so yeah, we'll do like a red chili sauce, we'll do like a wasabi mayonnaise, we'll do a sriracha mayo, and that is tempura. My one buddy is an amazing chef, and he turned me on to that. It's like where worlds collide, you know. He's an amazing chef, and he's like, you know, you ever done tempura? And he's not a wild game consumer. Like, he is, but he's not. Like, he's like, have you ever done that with like any of the white fish you catch? I'm like, no, but we're gonna try it. And
tomorrow.
Boy, there. Yeah, we did it the next day after he said that, and then it's been a mainstay.
We'll be there for dinner.
I mean, how far are you guys away? You're probably only 6 hours away, right?
I was going to say, Iowa's not too far. I'll be there.
Yeah,
don't worry.
Not too far. Yeah. Come on up. Yeah. Cool.
All right. Jason, again, thanks for joining us. And hope our listeners share this episode with all their hunting and fishing friends that are trying to figure out how to cook that game meat, and tell them about the Great Plains Outdoors podcast.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you guys very much for having me on. It's been a real pleasure. And I appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. We'll see you guys out there.
See ya.
Bye.